What's going on, everybody? It's your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music, the podcast episode. I want to say 109, and I got a special guest on the show today. I got my boy Dre Lalo.
You feel me? Nebula never regular. Yeah.
How you been, bro?
Been good. Been chilling. Been grinding. You know, living.
So before we get into the questions and everything, though, introduce yourself to the people real quick.
You feel me? I go by Dre Lalo, straight out of Little Haiti, born and raised. You feel me? I'm a rapper, lyricist, songwriter, and I do what I does, you feel me?
So tell us about your beginnings. Like, what made you want to get into, like, you know, the music and everything?
You know what? I started in my grandma's church. I was in the band in my grandma's church. I played the trumpet, the piano, and the bass guitar.
Right.
And then I always was into, like, writing, like, poems and stuff, poetry. Mm-hmm. And then that, like, turned into, like, writing raps. Mm-hmm. And I used to actually perform, like, in front of my, like, I had a cool, like, elementary school teacher, like, I think fifth grade. He used to let us perform in front of the class and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no cussing and stuff, but, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with all aspects of it, the writing, the performing, the lyricism, everything about rap and music in general.
So when it comes to hip hop, like, was it that moment, or did you, like, what artists did you listen to at the time that kind of motivated you to get into the hip hop and pick up that pen?
I feel like I'm a well-rounded artist because I had different phases where I wanted to do different things in hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point where I just wanted to be a ghostwriter.
Right.
There was a point where I just wanted to. There's a point I wanted to battle rap.
Right.
As opposed to a point I wanted to make beats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, different phases in my life I had, like, because there was a time where the thing that got me really into, like, rapping,
mm-hmm.
I think it's battle rap. Because I started watching a lot of battle rap, and mm-hmm. I like the wordplay. Because I've come from, like, my favorite artists, like, Lil Wayne with crazy wordplay, like Eminem.
Right.
Like, I always like that, like, do a lot of wordplay and can make puns and similes and double entendres, and that's what a lot in battle rap.
Right.
But I started noticing that battle rappers really can't make songs.
They can. They good with the
wordplay. Yeah.
Wordplay, but
when they try to make, like, a record, people don't want to hear that. Like, so it got to a phase where I was just like, that's not too. I feel like that's a little recently. I got more into focusing on it's not just about lyrics. It's about harmonies and it's not what you say. It's how you say it and stuff like that.
So some of the battle rappers, you talk about the battle rap, because, you know, Miami slowly becoming, like, you know, I guess it's seen now when it comes to battle rap. But who did you look up to in the battle rap scene?
My favorite battle rapper is Loaded Lux.
Yeah, Loaded Lux.
That's my favorite. I like Conceited too.
Mm-hmm.
I like Arsenal. There's a bunch more.
That's what's up. So after the whole battle rap, you know, thing, and you didn't really mess with it like that, because of that, you wanted to be an artist.
Yeah.
You said that you listened to Wayne and Eminem.
Yeah.
Like, what made them, you know, I guess, different from everybody else?
I feel like they find like a balance, like, between, like, being witty and wordplay, but at the same time still being catchy and having, like, something that people can say, oh, okay, it's, like, memorable and stuff.
Yeah. So, when was the first time that you, like, I guess, recorded, like, that first song? Like, was you nervous? Was you excited? Like, did you mess up?
The first song I recorded, I was in, like, 11th grade, I believe. Until, like, a real, like, I've been recording before that. I recorded songs, like, at home on my laptop with, like, no mic, just, like, putting my face close to the laptop and stuff. But I went to the first real studio in, like, 11th grade. I was nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a verse, and that's when I started noticing that, like, this battle rapping is not the same, and, like, lyrical stuff and writing freestyle is not the same as making a song.
Right.
Because I was on a song with two other people.
Mm-hmm.
Then my verse was first, so I recorded my verse first.
Mm-hmm.
Then they recorded their two verses after me, and theirs was much simpler than mine, but everybody in the studio was more, like, hooked into theirs.
Right.
And I'm like, dang. I'm like, I use all these metaphors and this and that, but they transitioned to these ones because, like, they had a more swag in it. So I redid my verse, and that's when it came out a little better. And I'm like, okay, it's not really about, okay, the hardest bars, the hardest this.
Right.
It's like what you say and how you say it too.
But, like, because I always want to ask, like, artists, like, does it matter where you want to be at? Like, let's say it's like three or four artists on the track. You want to be in the beginning, the middle, towards the end, or the final step? Like, what's the,
But with that, I feel like that comes at, well, when the more you rap, I feel like the point is to start becoming like more strategic thing than because like if you're if I'm a new artist, and I, let's say I get a feature with, let me say a big artist, probably like 2 Chainz.
Yeah.
If I put 2 Chainz in the first verse, people are probably gonna just hear the first verse and like, okay, I like that.
Yeah, that's
Run it.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, you got the newer artist or the person that's trying to get more shine, put yours first so you can hear. You gotta get to the one, I guess, that's most popular. I feel like that's the equation people mostly use to figure out who goes first and second. Like, the most popular is first and last. So you can hear the first couple people first.
Yeah, that's what's up. Because I always like, you know, it's competition, you know, getting that boost. So,
or like, not even, and even if they, like, I feel like they're on the same level, like, all the artists are, like, on the same level of popularity.
Right.
It's who versus the hardest is last.
Right.
They, you know, always save the best for last. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I like.
And do y'all get, like, do y'all always get in the engineer ill all the time, like put me right here instead of putting me first and stuff like that? Or like,
I mean, well, now with core people, we usually have it set up before, like, we know which verse is going where.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I have a couple of songs where they put me on like the first verse, mm-hmm. and the person will be like, "Oh, you killed me on my own song!" Like, and they're like, "Hey, you gotta come hard."
So we talked about your first time writing and recording and whatnot. How was your first performance? Like, how was that?
The first performance, it was actually like an epiphany for me, because mm-hmm. I'm a very shy, quiet person.
Mm-hmm.
My first time was performing was at an open mic. My boy told me, "Let's go, let's do it."
Mm-hmm.
I honestly stepped into that not knowing what would happen. I don't know if I would have had a stage fright, if I would have froze or nothing. Mm-hmm. But like, once I got on that stage, I turned into a new person. Like, everything was flowing. I wasn't shy. I wasn't timid. It just was like I was built for it, basically.
Right. So that first time you were just excited, because most artists, you know, they always tell me that, you know, you gotta look at the crowd and stuff. You gotta look in their eyes and see like their reaction and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so like after that first moment, it just became more easier for you just to engage and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, tell me, like, the importance of, you know, being engaged with the fans or whatnot.
Yeah, you always gotta know your crowd. You gotta study them. You gotta, I don't know how to explain it. When you're performing, you can tell if they're paying attention or not.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not, you gotta find a way to get them to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of course, especially at open mics. That's why I'm glad that I did open mics before I did like real shows.
Mm-hmm.
Open mics, they don't really, like, you're a nobody to them. There's like, you have to give them a reason to look at you. They're not gonna, like, you go to like a 2 Chainz show, they're here for 2 Chainz. They're gonna know, okay, we're gonna look for 2 Chainz.
Right.
But open mic, they're not here for anybody. They're just there. So you gotta, like, win the audience over.
Mm-hmm. Do you think open mics are dead, or do you think that like it's just the beginning? Like, as far as like, because you know, you see a lot of like, I guess, mom and pop.
Yeah.
You know, they're starting to have like different, like, I guess, talent shows or whatnot. But we come from the open mic era. Like, do you think it's dead, or you think it's?
Now, I feel like the open mic is I hope it's not dying. I feel like it's a very important part of becoming an artist.
Yeah, that's how we know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very important part. This is how you learn how to engage your audience, how you learn how to have stage presence.
Mm-hmm.
It's like on a smaller scale. You don't want to be your first show to be a big, huge show, and then you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's a stomping ground. It's a stepping stone to get to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings a lot of opportunity, too. I've got a lot of shows from people that watch me from open mic. They're like, mm-hmm. you did it. I loved your performance. Come over to this podcast, or I have a show and I want people mm-hmm. to perform. I got so much opportunities from it.
Right, and you're originally from here?
Yeah, from Little Haiti, born and raised.
Right, so you're a Haitian, first, like, generation, like, American?
Yeah, my mom was born here and my dad was born in Haiti. But my mom's mom was born in Haiti. Yeah.
So how is that, like, culture-wise? Because, you know, I'm Bahamian descent, so I know, I tell people all the time, like, in that household, like, education was important.
Yeah.
You know, even when I first started DJing, my old girl, she was like, "I ain't buying you shit until I see that you're serious about it."
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I'm saying? So how was that when you approached them about the music and everything?
Well, my mom was always supportive mm-hmm. from the jump. Like, cause my mom was more, everybody was mostly more surprised that I was like, I'm quiet Andre in the family. Like, I don't really be talking. I'm not outspoken or nothing. And like, they'll be like, "Andre rap? What Andre? Not quiet Andre, like, he rapping. What you mean, he performing in front of people too?"
Yeah.
Like, it was a more surprise than everybody, and then everybody was like supportive and got behind me.
Mm-hmm. That's what's up, because I was like that too as DJ. They're like, "John, you you know, you a DJ. And stuff like that. I ain't gonna talk on the mic and stuff like that, but you know, especially when the mixtape game, you know, around that time, like I was just messing with that, and then you know, towards when I started, you know, performing with the DJ and stuff, you know, I still didn't talk, you know, but it was cool to, you know, meet up with people. So growing up in Little Haiti, you know, born and raised, you know, a lot of out-of-towners, they don't know the history about Little Haiti. And now, you know, we having the gentrification going on right now. They're trying to push everybody out and get rid of the history. Like, explain to the people, like, the experience, like, growing up in Little Haiti.
Little Haiti, it was filled with culture, like, filled with, like, Zoes on every corner. I never been to Haiti, and I just got my passport recently, and that's one of the first places I want to visit.
Same here, like, I ain't never been to Bahamas. I'm trying to slide over there.
Yeah, I'm trying to, that's one of the first places I want to visit, and I feel like Little Haiti gave me my piece of Haiti in America. Mm-hmm. Like, you see Zoes walk around holding the stuff on their head, and, like, just the culture is so rich. The Haitian food places, just the Haitian, they're like friendly people, they're like neighborly. Mm-hmm. And it's like really, it's really getting gentrified now, because the block that I stay on, every house was filled with Haitians. Like, there's Haitian people that live in every house. Now it's only like the house I stay in and like one other person on my block is the only Haitians. Mm-hmm. Like, everything else is getting gentrified in the area. And it's like, I feel like there's nothing wrong with better and stuff, because they're like rebuilding the houses, making them better, but I feel like it's losing the culture. There's nothing is Haitian owned anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, it's,
you could say that too, because, you know, I didn't even know this, but even if you look at Little Havana, a lot of the Cubans moving out, they getting all the Puerto Ricans moving out, and they bringing like all these South Americans and stuff that just came over.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, the change is good, because like, they're bringing businesses there. I see like a lot of new buildings in Little Haiti, and I'm like, okay, damn, this is good. But the fact that none of it's Haitian owned, like, I feel like the culture is being lost there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, when I look at like, even like the Boca Beans, you know, over time, you look at Wynwood, you know, it's good that it's changing, but it's not from my own kind. Exactly. It's not from my own culture, you know. And like, for me, it's like, you have all these investors and stuff like that that come down to Miami and try to make it Las Vegas, or try to make it LA, or try to make it New York, but Miami is never going to be them cities, because Miami, even I have folk from bigger cities like New York and stuff, they say like, we just so different down here.
Yeah.
Like in Florida in general, like our slang, our culture, our vibe and stuff like that. So it's like, one day my goal is to, you know, try to buy back the block, you know, like what Ross said, like really buy back the block, because it's like, when you go to different cities, like you see Atlanta, like Atlanta, you have people from out of town that come to Atlanta, but Atlanta still somehow, some way, they keep their culture, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, Houston, you know, you got like, even when I went to Memphis, like, they still got their culture, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I went to a club in Atlanta, and I kid you not, all they played was Atlanta music, period. Right. I didn't hear not one from no other country, like, Atlanta music, period.
But how you feel about that, though? Like, you know, being from Miami, and even the underground station waxing us now.
Like,
how you feel about like the status right now?
I feel like it have a lot. I'm not trying to get too political, and but I feel like it's a lot about the economy too.
Right.
Because the cost of living in Miami is high. And like, I feel like that makes everything revolve around money. Now it's not about, okay, to put on for my city, my culture. Now it's about, damn, I got to pay rent. I got to, it's expensive to live here, so I got to make money, and it's. Mm. It sucks how it is, but we got to get more into. That's speaking for myself too. We got to get more into politics to see how to better the economy down here, because the cost of living, it makes you have to be that savage. Like, damn, that's my homeboy. I want to put him on, but I need money. I got my bills to pay. I got this, and it's cost this much to stay here. I'm like, damn. So let me charge him to come on my show instead of putting him on, because I know he's my people. Mm. So we just gotta get into like politics and like change the whole economy down here, because the cost of living down here is ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I mean,
but at the same time too, I still feel like we could get money together down here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it gotta come to a point where, you know, we got this mentality of like, we not friendly and stuff, but to me that's bullshit, because honestly, I seen it firsthand when different places that come here. that's when we show our hospitality, and I'm like, we gotta cut that out.
Exactly,
like, we
showing it to other people instead of showing it to our own people.
Yeah, because it's like, it's so many opportunities down here, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, even, you know, shout out to the other media outlets and stuff, like, we the way that we building, you know, we should keep it, but we also, should continue to collaborate.
Exactly,
you know, I feel like, because
I see it firsthand in Little Haiti, it's like, the niggas from east side of Little Haiti don't like the niggas from the west side of Little Haiti. I'm like, bro, y'all, that's stupid. Y'all from the same area. Like, it don't make no sense to me.
So what are your goals for this year?
My goals for this year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just dropped the EP at the end of last year.
Yeah, it was hard.
I'm dropping another EP in a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And I want to drop an album, probably in the summer, called Lalo Gambino, dedicated to my mom. She passed in 2018.
Oh, sorry to hear that, bro.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, and I want to dedicate that album to her, because she was, like, one of my biggest supporters, when I first started doing music.
Mm-hmm. And how, like, when she passed away around that time, like, did everything just stop? Like, you didn't want to do music no more?
Yeah, I there was a point where I wanted to quit. I wanted to stop. Like, I wanted to, like, what am I doing this for? Like, but she came to me in a dream. And, like, I had a dream that I was at, like, a party or something, and she just walked in, and I ran up and hugged her. And she told me, everything's gonna be all right, everything's good. And just that's all she said in the dream, and that told me that I gotta keep going. I'm like, she's still here, and she came to me for a reason in that dream.
Right.
And the words she said was powerful. Everything's all right, you're good.
Right.
And that told me I gotta keep going.
You know what they say, especially, you know, over in the islands, they say dreams is real, and it is, like, man. You told me about your mom coming in your dream and stuff and telling you everything will be all right. Like, that's that real shit. Because that's what happened with my grandma when she passed, was it 2013? And, you know, around that time, like, I just wanted to drop out of school. I ain't want to do shit no more. Because people got to realize, like, even with my grandfather right now, like, I'm helping. He got Alzheimer's, you know.
Yeah,
so
my grandpa too.
Yeah, so it's like, one. People understand, like, that shit, like, is mental to yourself too. Yeah. Like, you go through the same routine every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember I had a dream, and she showed herself as if she was healthy again.
Yeah.
You know how they say, when you go to the other side, you know, you yourself again, you know? And that shit motivated me. And I'm like, you know, my grandma had 3 strokes. The third one was the one that knocked her out, but
she's a fighter. She
So why I gotta complain about, you know, all this shit? Well, I can make stuff happen. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's crazy. So, what are your plans? Maybe, where you see yourself out of 10 years from now?
10 years from now, I see myself creating opportunities for other artists like me. Like, I wanna eventually start, like, a label, start, like, just wanna open a studio.
Mm-hmm.
I wanna just be like a mogul in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to help others like me that don't know that where they can find outlets to channel their emotions or the energy of, like, doing music. Not just rap, singing, poetry, making beats, like any of the arts. Like, I wanna give them a lane to, like, where they can go to.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the label, do you have specific sound, or you just want to just help the right people, like the people?
Just, I always think my big thing, because I know a lot of people that make music and rap, but I look for more of what's the word? I look for a hard worker more than I look for talent.
Right.
Because hard work beats talent if talent don't work hard.
Right.
I know a lot of talented people that are just lazy, and it's like,
right,
I'd rather work with a hard-working artist that's not as good or as the other artists than a talented artist that's lazy as hell.
Right.
You know, so hard work is what I'm really looking for. Like, people that really want it, really motivated.
Right. But a lot of people don't think like you like that no more.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I was telling people, like, you know, history always repeat itself. So during the streaming era, like, you'll think like, all right, I can create my own label and this and that.
Yeah.
Create partnerships with the bigger labels, you know. But now it's like people seeing everybody else just make one song and blow up. They think they could do that themselves, but that's a that's an anomaly. Like, you don't see that all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't, you know, back in the day, you know, because we was the last generation to see know, to sell the CDs, sell it from the back of the trunk and stuff like that. Like, these kids coming up from the 2000s.
They see people that go on YouTube, get a million views, and right. That's how I do it. Drop one song, get a million views, and I'm on. And that's not how it always goes. It's like once in a while that happens. It's like playing the lotto. You don't know if you're going to, that's what happened to you. I'd rather somebody that's grind, that's, okay, I dropped this, 5, 10 songs this day, then videos for each song, push these songs, okay, now I'm dropping another couple songs.
Right.
Like, consistency kills. Like,
right.
Yeah, consistency kills.
Yeah, who's in your top five?
Like, my top five? For all time?
Mm-hmm.
Jay-Z.
Right.
The old Kanye.
Yeah, you gotta say that.
You gotta say the old, you gotta put that in there. Lil Wayne. I'm a big Pusha T fan.
You the first one that said Pusha T.
Yeah.
In the top five.
Yeah, Pusha T. People sleep on Pusha T.
But why is that though? Because Pusha T, to me, he top five lyricists.
Yeah, Pusha T is a bit hard. They gotta be in my top five. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he's overlooked like that. I really don't know.
Is it because he he was in the group before, he's from Virginia.
I heard that before. A lot of people say, his brother was better.
Yeah.
But cause he said on the song, I forgot the exact line. But he said, "If my brother better, then what do you say? If my brother better, and we at the top, then we rule." Like,
yeah,
I'm he the best. I'm second best. I'm still better than y'all. Like,
yeah, he's he been running in the rap game for 20 years.
Exactly.
Man, 40+ years old.
Exactly.
But he's
still relevant.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know why the people sleep on him, but he get my top five, and I think that was four. The last one, I'd probably say. I said Jay-Z, Kanye, Pusha T, Lil Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Probably gotta go with. I'm not even sure about the fifth. I say Pop.
Pop?
Yeah.
Pop?
Yeah.
Why Pop?
Because he was just different, his style. A lot of people say Biggie over Pop, but I say Pop. He was just, like what I said, Biggie had the lyricism and stuff. It's not even what Pac says, how he said it.
Mm-hmm.
His flow is different. He didn't rap in pocket all the time, and it still sounded hard. He's different.
Yeah, we always had these arguments. For me, I like Biggie over Pac, but when you listen to Pac, Pac could relate to a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
It's just it's kind of like that J. Cole, Kendrick.
Yeah.
Because J. Cole... a lot of people say, he could relate to the college students, the people that's dealing with a lot of shit, the people that's in relationships, the marriage couple, the fathers. But Kendrick, he relate to everybody.
Yeah.
But it's either or.
Yeah, it's back and forth. Sometimes I say Biggie, sometimes I say Pop. It just depends on how I'm feeling that day.
Yeah.
Juggle. Yeah.
So where do you see yourself 5 to 10 years from now?
5 to 10 years from now, I see myself a label owner, the owner of a studio. I see myself with platinum albums.
Mm-hmm.
I see myself as a dude that put other artists on.
Right.
I see myself as a mogul, as a Little Haiti legend, a Miami legend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you, I'm trying to ask you this thing. I've asked every artist, every DJ and stuff like this, we talked about the economy and stuff, and it's hard out here and stuff like that. But when do you think would be that day when, Miami artists will unite? When you think that will happen?
I mean, I feel like it's slowly coming. It's coming to that slowly but surely.
Because
I feel like it's way better than back in the days. I feel like more Miami artists are starting to work together more. They're starting to get on a higher plateau. Starting to get more recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's coming real soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you next to blow, bro.
Appreciate it.
At FIU, I heard you when. When you was performing and everything, I listened to some of your songs, my wife, me and her, we was going to something to eat last night, and she was saying, I fuck with him, you better fuck with him, I only mess with artists that, Yeah. Not just good, but I can relate to. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And the thing about your music is that you relate to everybody. You tell a story. Yeah. You know, you talk about different stuff that we all go through, especially us 90 babies, you know.
Of course.
A lot of people don't realize that, you know, everybody from like the 60s, 70s, 80s, they have their own story, but us, we went through a lot. Like just like the generation that went through like the depression and stuff like that.
Exactly.
You know, mental health, like we get shut out. People think, oh, we soft and stuff, but they don't understand, like, you know, going home, trying to do homework, try to, you know, deal with sports, you know,
exactly.
Do our own thing, and then also try to please our parents and stuff like that. Like, they don't understand that.
I feel like we also in the middle ground too. Like, we part of the before technology age and the technology age. Like, we still do have, like, some people still have CDs, some people still have streaming.
Yeah.
Like, we on both sides. We're like in the middle ground. I feel like we not understood by the people after us or people before us.
I still buy DVDs.
Like
I was explaining to somebody, like, we the reason why they have social media and stuff, because we was the social birds. We was the generation where we'll play video games and stuff like that, but we learned how to go outside, go to the park. We could, you know, like one day, me and my homeboys, we was at Steak and Shake.
Yeah.
And like, we seen these teenagers, they was all like, it was like five of them on the phone like this.
At the table, like nobody talking to each other.
Yeah, I'm like, we have cell phones, we got cell phones now.
Yeah.
But we don't be stuck on it, you know? And if we do bring out a cell phone, we showing like a video or whatnot, of a highlight or whatever. So it's just, you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's changing. The world changing.
Yeah, man. So you got any shout outs before we close it up?
Oh, man. Shout out to my boy Don D, the producer. Shout out to my manager, Oliver. Shout out to my boy Hollywood. He passed in 2018. Matter of fact, he passed the week before my mom passed. So that was like, because I remember he passed on the 10th, the Saturday. And then, like, the middle of the week, my mom called me to see how I was posting about it. She was like, oh, I heard your friend passed. She was consoling me. She was talking to me. And a couple days later, she passed. Saturday and the next Saturday. So I was, my mental health was declining at that point.
Are you still, working on that? Because it's still fresh.
Yeah, it's still fresh. I'm still, like, going through the motions. I still feel it. I feel it. Because, like, those were my two, like, main supporters. Hollywood, he rapped, too.
Mm-hmm.
He was rapping, like, longer than me. And he showed me a lot of the ropes. He showed me how to deal with people, how to deal with promoters, how to...
Mm-hmm.
How to, he helped me, like, when I told y'all, like, mostly like a lyricist, he told me, okay, you gotta harmonize, you gotta,
he showed
me a lot of that, and he, like, when he passed, it, like, hurt me a lot. Then my mom passed a week after, and I'm like, damn, my two biggest supporters, and that's really what made me, like, that I want to quit, like, why am I doing this, like, but I had to keep pushing on for them.
Right.
But yeah, shout out to my girl, Sky Lola, shout out to my boy T Black, you know, the whole Never Regular fam. A shout out to my boy Young D. Everybody in Little Haiti is doing their thing, and you know, shout out to you, DJ Anonymous. You already know
dog. Hey, like I said, like, you got studio time or whatever, or anything you got going on, performance, whatever, just hit me up, dog. My goal for this show is to try to be in everybody's faces, like, try to, and then support.
Yeah, you got to get that unity together, man.
Yeah, dog.
Get up there together.
Yeah, because that was the whole purpose of the podcast. Like, you know, I want to reach out to everybody, especially down here.
Yeah.
And then, like, oh, shit, he interviewed that person. He interviewed that person and stuff. And just connect, because I'm seeing it, you know, little by little.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, people following each other on Twitter and Instagram, you know, collaborating.
That's what it's about. Get everybody together.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
You know, but thank you again, dog. Man, this be your boy, DJ Anonymous, with Sports Biz Music, podcast with the boy, Dre Lalo, and we out.